Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the latest podcast from the Banter team. There's a grand stretch in the evenings, and that means we're looking forward to summer, and especially banter at various summer festivals. Last year, we were in situ at the Phoenix Park in Dublin for the annual Bloom Festival, and here's Bloom show manager, Gary Graham, talking about what's involved in putting on the biggest show in town.
Hi everybody, welcome back to Banter here at Bloom. It gives me great pleasure to welcome the most chilled man on the site, the person responsible for 100,000 people being here today. Please give a warm welcome to Gary Graham. I mean, I have to say, like, let's start with kind of like me this morning coming in and kind of leaving, cutting things fine and seeing a queue of cars at 9:15 and going, I'm not going to get in here in time. And then finding out actually get in here in time. The logistics behind the whole thing, Gary. I mean, in terms of kind of like, you know, Bloom has grown. It's the 10th year next year. When you put together Bloom in the first place, in the very first time, what was the plan behind it? What was the genesis of Bloom? Where did it come from?
Well, I suppose the story goes back about maybe 15 years, 20 years. Back in my Borg Glass days, some of you may remember the old horticultural board. We got merged or consumed by Board B, if you like, there a few years back. And back in those days, we supported the likes of Dermot Gavin and Mary Reynolds and people when they were trying to get going and doing gardens at Chelsea Flower Show. Would I bring that a bit nearer? Is that better? Sorry. And that was great and fine. They were doing wonderful things, but we felt that nobody here was actually getting to see what their work. And we felt like, well, what are we doing? Like we're developing these guys and helping them to go and show their stuff to other countries. Some great shows, and we were very proud of them. But we felt, well, we need to have our own show here. And a number of people had tried over many years. And some of you will remember some of the really good shows we had in the RDS. There was a great show up in UCD a long time ago. But nobody ever managed to make a sustainable show that could keep going. So it got to the point where we felt that we needed to have our own show, one proper national show, and that then hopefully would help some of the smaller regional shows to copy and look at the format. So we put a plan together. Borg Glass got merged with Board Beer, and Aidan Cotter, our chief executive, said, well, okay, if you want to put this to the board, gave me the opportunity, I suppose, to pitch it. And I went to the board and said, well, we want to do a small version of what was happening across the water, Chelsea Flower Show or a Hampton Court type show. We thought we'd have maybe a show suited to maybe 20, 30,000 people. It's over 100,000 now, I should say, that do attend. We thought we'd have maybe 5 or 10 decent gardens. We'd have a small artisan food market. And that was the sort of thinking at the time. We weren't really quite sure how successful it would be. And the board said, OK, you can do it for 3 years, Gary, and we'll give you a budget to get it going for 3 years, and then it needs to start to stack up and wash its face and so on. So that's 9 years ago. The first year, if any of you were here, may remember, it rained an awful lot. Was anyone here in the first year? We had water running out of the show gardens. It was. But people still came.
Yeah.
And we had 45,000 in the first year. I think such was the interest. And I think from year one, thanks to the public support, people said, well, listen, this is the show we want. People were proud of it. They said, well, you know, we don't necessarily have to go to Chelsea or Hampton Court or watch it on the BBC. We should have our own support, our own show. And it's gone from strength to strength.
I mean, one of the things, I suppose, that sets Bloom apart is the diversity of things that are here, you know. I mean, we're here in the middle of the food village. You've talked about the show gardens. Obviously, they're a big pull. There's a flower arranging pavilion. There's also, as well, like, I mean, obviously, the people are here as well to kind of for the crafts as well. Over the years, as things were kind of like being developed, was there any kind of like angle, was there any kind of developments that surprised you? Were there kind of like areas you brought on board and put into the kind of the run of Bloom that surprised you the way they took off?
We decided very much from the get-go that it wouldn't be the same as a British, an RHS-type flower show. We felt that wouldn't work quite. If you know those shows, they're great shows, and I go all the time, but they're very much grown-up affairs. They're very much aimed at the gardenistas and the serious horticulturists, and they're not necessarily friendly to people who might have a small or an emerging interest in gardening or indeed in food. They don't do food very well at those shows at all. So we felt from year one that, because obviously our job in Board B is not just to cater for those people who are converted to all this stuff. We wanted to bring in new people who may never be interested in gardening or plants or horticulture, and we wanted to expand the market, I suppose. My throat is gone from so much talking last days. I was confident because my background is in horticulture. I trained in the Botanic Gardens. Myself and Dermot Gavin were in the same class, I know, and I worked in design and landscaping. I knew we had the talent here if we could have a show for them. So I was very confident about the gardens and what we could do. But I think because of the organisation we are, we didn't want to just, as I said, cater for the converted. We wanted to expand the market. We wanted to show the people we have these fantastic designers, great growers, horticulturists. So we said, well, let's make it child-friendly, make sure we bring in kids' features, encourage some of the designers to look at gardens that are more suited at kids. So we do, you know, the free tickets for kids and all that kind of stuff. And then I suppose because the Irish personality is a little bit different from many of the British personalities in terms of when we come to a show, we want to engage, we want to talk to the designer, we want to find out where that came from. We're not necessarily happy to stand behind a white rope all the time, behind, you know, 20 people, like those polite British people. We want to get up close and engage, and we can do that. And whether it's on the horticulture side with the designers and the growers and so on, or on the food side where so many of these guys, particularly the people over here behind me, are so passionate about what they do. And if you give them an opportunity to engage with a visitor, everyone benefits from that. So yeah, so we decided let's make it more friendly, let's make it child friendly. A little bit more casual, a little bit more fun, and try to encourage more people to come along who are looking for a day out. But I always say you may come here looking for just for a day out and have no interest in food or gardening, but I don't think you could leave here without seeing something. And you say, well, I'd like a bit of that if I can afford it, or I'll do a bit of this, or you'll taste something, or you'll sample something. And that's really, I suppose, the real measure of success of Bloom.
I mean, the other measure of success as well is kind of getting 100,000 people on and off of a site, a temporary site, successfully, you know? Like, obviously, next year is a 10th year, and I was asking you, are you going to start working this on Tuesday? You said you're already starting working on this. You know, obviously, the work involved and the logistics involved in this are quite big. What's your team like? I mean, how many people actually work on Bloom?
I work on it all year round. I work on other projects as well, but there's probably rarely a day I don't work on Bloom. There's four or five other people who will be working with me across the year. And again, they're working on other projects as well. But every day we're doing something on Bloom. That builds then, obviously, as we get closer to the event. Practically every one of my colleagues in Board B, and people do forget sometimes that this is a Board B event. They think, oh, it's sponsored by Board B and they have got something to do with the Food Village. I think everyone in Board B, including the accounts departments and the people who work in the cafe, everyone in the organisation has some involvement, comes here and makes some contribution. So that builds as we get nearer to the show. All of the 70 or 80 people that I work with are involved. Then we use a couple of event management companies, external companies, because most of the events we do are trade events. You know, we're away at all the foreign shows, where, you know, we're developing exports and so on. So they're trade events. They're very different from a major consumer event. And as you said, that requires a lot more logistical support and operational expertise. So then we bring in some external people. And we're working with most of the same people over the 9 years. And I guess because when we started, there was nothing like this. So you couldn't say, well, we'll have this person and that person. So we've all grown with the event, and we've all learned, I suppose, how to do it a little bit better. Because every year there's something we'll get wrong. And we realise, you know, we really have to address that. Parking and getting in and out, you said that. In the first few years, that was really difficult, trying to figure out how you use the park, people coming from one side of the country, how you're going to get them in and out, working with on guard and so on. So we learn something every year and take a lot of notes, have a lot of meetings. Before we leave the show, there'll be a meeting where all of us involved in the management side will have reviewed everything, and we'll sit down and we look and see what we need to do better. We have our ambassadors, our stewards. I'm sure you've met them around the show. They're great. They're all volunteers. They're talking to people, finding out what we need to do. And we do a survey as well. Take that on board, a formal survey, and look and see how we can improve it.
Yeah. Because I mean, often when people come to something like Bloom, they see the gardens and they see the kind of like the flower stuff. They see all the really nice, pretty stuff. They don't realize, the biggest sign of success is the stuff you don't notice. It's stuff that you take for granted, like the car parking and like the loos. And they're often those kind of boring detail that gets lost on everyone.
Yeah, it's true. Like there was a time when the highlight of my year was to go to the Chelsea Flower Show. And now when I go to the Chelsea Flower Show, and I was there last week, I spend my time looking at trip hazards. And is that sign pointing the right way? And is that toilet ladies or gents? Or looking, you know, how... Because that's what it's all about. It's really about making sure that people are comfortable and safe and that they have a good experience. There's no point in having fantastic content if people are uncomfortable. The crowds is a real challenge, you know, trying to get people through the show garden area. And particularly, as I said, I think being Irish, we like to have a bit of space, you know, where we're personable and we're physical, but we want to see things in comfort. We won't stand politely and wait forever to see a garden. And that's the real challenge, is getting people through those pinch points. Yeah, it seems to be working.
Okay, you mentioned kind of that you were at Chelsea Flower Show last week, and obviously you're there. Aside from looking at kind of trip hazards and signage, you're also kind of like me looking at what they actually do. What are the garden shows? What are kind of like me festivals of this ilk do you go to for research and development purposes, Gary?
Chelsea is I suppose the gold standard, I guess, in terms of international shows, and everybody's aware of Chelsea. So I'd always try to have a look at Chelsea, and two of our judges are heavily involved in Chelsea. They're either judging and or they're designing or building gardens there. So it's good to see what they're doing. Hampton Court, I guess, if anyone is interested in going to shows across the water, I would encourage them to go to Hampton Court. Has anyone been to Hampton Court? No, it's a very comfortable show. A little bit more space. It's in the grounds of the palace, Hampton Court Palace. So it's a beautiful backdrop. I would say it's probably the closest show to what we do here. That'd be the closest model, I suppose, that we would try to follow. Although we have gone off in different directions in recent years. There's a great show in France in Chaumont-sur-Loire, which is worth a visit. It's a very different show because it's run over a whole summer. So rather than trying to have everything look fantastic for 5 days, they're trying to make it look decent, I guess, for a whole summer. And that's very, very difficult to do. We looked at that format before we decided on Bloom. And it's something that I like the format, because when you think about all the energy and cost that goes to build these gardens and put it together, you think, oh, wouldn't it be great if they were there for weeks or months? But actually, it doesn't really work. It really doesn't work. After a week or two, the interest wanes, the gardens don't necessarily look so good, and you don't get the crowds, you don't get the buzz, you don't get the media interest, and all that is really important to what we do here, because we want the people who don't come to the show to see it on the telly or read about it or hear you or see what's going on, and whether they came to the show or not, they still might go out and do some gardening and buy some plants, and that's really what my job is all about. Sorry, so you're asking about shows. The other show that I've been to, which is regarded as the biggest show and the oldest show in the world, is the Philadelphia show. That's quite interesting, if you're ever in that part of the world. But it's actually indoors. It's in March in Philadelphia. There's like 2 foot of snow, and you go into this massive, massive arena, and it's like Disney World meets Hollywood meets I don't know. Everything is artificial. And it's artificial light. And any of the serious gardeners here will know that light is so important when you're looking at plants. It's very difficult to get that effect with artificial light. The other good show is Ellerslie in New Zealand, which unfortunately didn't go ahead this year. And it's almost a carbon copy of this show. And it's on the other side of the world. Very similar, similar people, similar plants. Again, the gardeners here will know a lot of the plants we use are Australasian plants that come from that part of the world. Beautiful show, and the great thing about that show is I had some of them here shadow judging with us. I did some shadow judging for them, so you're looking in on the judging, but you're not actually voting. And we're hoping to bring a garden from New Zealand to Bloom, hopefully next year. So, sorry, you were asking about Belgarden. Yeah, so they're the shows I would recommend. But if you're going across the water, I would say have a look at Hampton Court. Definitely much more comfortable. A lot of people who go to Chelsea are disappointed, particularly Irish people, because they feel, you know what, I couldn't see the gardens. It was too crowded. The food wasn't great. It was overpriced. I'm better off watching it on the BBC. Is that terrible to say that?
Well, it's true, you know.
I've just said it now, it's too late.
I'm recorded as well. You're very diplomatic in that all the festivals you've mentioned so far have either been in the States, New Zealand, France, or UK. What about festivals here in Ireland? What about events here in Ireland? Obviously, Bloom is the big dad, it's the big one. Are there other kind of, like, I mean, events around the country that you've kind of, like, you've go to and you go, I'm not going to say steal or borrow, but you go, at something they've done.
Are there other events around the country other than Bloom? You mean there is a life outside of Bloom?
There's a life outside of Phoenix Park.
There are other things going on, yeah. No, there are. Of course there are. They're great shows. I like Taste of Dublin because it comes sort of a week and a half after Bloom, and I'm relaxed and I can go and have a drink. I do like Taste. Obviously, it's a very different affair. It's more of a social, more of a grown-up thing, I think, for people who live and work around Dublin coming out of an evening time. But it's a nice show. On the horticultural gardening side, what's happened when we started Bloom, pretty much everyone had given up on gardening shows, and I think it has inspired others to do shows around the country. So now there are, I think, 5 or 6 small regional garden shows, and we put a scheme in place in the last 2 years to try help them to develop them shows. I won't try and name them all because I probably won't think of them.
Of
the most recent one that started is in Christchurch, which is on, I think, in a few weeks' time. Small show on the grounds of Christchurch. Again, fantastic backdrop, a small show. That's worth looking at. The Mallow Show has been going for quite a while. Has anyone been to the Mallow Show? Mallow Show is a nice show, and the fact that they have the permanent gardens there, and you can add to them every year, develop them, spruce them up and do something else. Mallow's a nice show, and some good nurseries down there as well. There's a new show in Clare, which is great, and they had a Bloom-style show garden there this year. That's a lovely show. There's a show up in Donegal, the Northwest Show, which was last weekend. I never get to that show because it's too close to Bloom. I'm going to be in trouble now because I'm sure there's another one that I've forgotten. But the great thing is that these shows are coming on now. And they are being inspired by Bloom, and people are going back and saying, well, let's do our own small local show, and that's good news.
Yeah, okay. Okay, like, obviously, a lot of people in the audience, aside from associating you with Bloom, would also associate you with Supergarden. And I'm curious as well, you said at the very start there that one of the ideas behind Bloom was you were sending people, Bord Loss was kind of, I suppose, supporting people like Mary Reynolds when she went to Chelsea in 2002, or Dermot Gavin, or whoever it was. You were supporting all these people. So in terms of kind of the gardening elements of Bloom, I mean, have you noticed certain stars emerging? Have you noticed a certain gardeners kind of like over the years kind of going like they come here maybe 1 year, they're like a would-be, they're building themselves up, and over a couple of years you can kind of go, okay, there's someone who's really developed and who's really kind of like been helped an awful lot by Bloom?
Yes, in short. One of the problems I've always felt we've had in this country, that other than Gerry Daly, a lot of people, particularly the older people like myself, would know Gerry and respect him. Dermot O'Neill, people know Dermot, and Dermot Gavin. Other than that, then, and particularly if you ask a younger person to name a famous Irish gardener or garden designer, they may or may not know Dermot Gavin, but they probably won't know anyone else. And I think that's one of the problems, because when we have so many good people, as far as I'm concerned, they should be very famous and we should all know their names. And that really is a part of the success of Bloom as well, that we have brought those people to the forefront. And I suppose I do see my role very much as a facilitator. I would prefer to have the designers up here. This is not about me, because these guys really are the stars, and they deserve to be the stars. And you had Fiend here earlier today, and he is a superstar. He is, you know, he is the rock star of our industry. So people like Fiend have come true, and that's great. People like Jane McCorkle, the most successful garden designer we've ever had here, and we've had her on TV as well, and Super Garden. People like Leonie Cornelius, who came in as a Super Garden entrant, won the show, came here, got a gold medal. Now she's the mentor on Super Garden. I see her splashed all over the papers today. She's a fantastic girl, really great designer. And she's bringing a lot of glamour and things to the industry that people, old fogies like me, could never bring to it. Or indeed Gerry Day. I'll name them all now. None of those could do that sort of thing and bring in that sort of younger interest.
And like, you know, just actually, that's a very interesting kind of comment, because, you know, if someone's bringing in a bit of glamour and a bit of kind of like that media interest in that kind of way, do you think, you know, it's important as well for gardening to take that on board? That it can't be just all about the planting. That obviously is important, but in order to kind of add a veneer and bring in that media interest that you're talking about, you do need something else. You do need that kind of like glamour, or even that kind of celebrity side.
I think you do. I think, unfortunately, the way we seem to work these days, if there isn't a celebrity associated with something, it almost gets passed by. So many things seem to be driven by celebrities. And I see it here. the number of people who will recognize me from Supergarden, and it's lovely. But what I like about it is when young kids come up and they say, yeah, we saw you on the telly, and can we get a picture? Then I know we've scored. That's great. But there's a whole celebrity thing just for the sake of it. We won't get into that, but I have views on that. No, you do. You need those people. You need to have a little bit of glamour. What annoys me most is when you get the serious gardeners talking about how serious gardening is. You know, and how you, if you're pruning your roses, you prune to your second outward facing bud, or you know, it just puts people off gardening. It makes it mysterious, and it's not that mysterious. And you can fail at gardening. It really doesn't matter that much if you kill a few plants. So, I don't like when everything is about making gardening and plants and garden design as some sort of a mysterious thing that you have to have these green fingers. That's rubbish. You know, anyone can do it at any level. So yes, so those people who will draw in others and make it interesting, make it engaging, make it a bit sexy, if you like. They're hugely important.
Okay, last question for me, and thanks so much for your time. I know how busy you are here. I know, the last thing you want to be doing is sitting here asking some questions, so I really appreciate you taking the time to come along to banter. Last question, Gary, in terms of this year's gardens, and, again, I asked you earlier on, and you were quite diplomatic, but, you can talk a little bit about this year's gardens in terms of what the judges have decided, in terms of the prizes that have been given. What's kind of stood out? Is there trends you've kind of noticed this year that you can imagine will be emulated and repeated in years to come, or will influence people to do their own things?
Yeah, I'm obviously always careful about picking one above another, and that's, you know, and it is with gardens are very subjective. You know, we all have our own view of, and that it might be something we experienced as a child or some place we were in that we really liked, or you think, yeah, that's a garden, that's what I want. So you have to be very careful about picking gardens. Our judges do that very well when they're picking their gardens for the medals, and they have a very, very robust criteria that's used, and that takes the subjectivity out of it. Thankfully, this year, their scoring was very high, and we've had more gold medals than we've ever had, actually. Every single garden got a medal. That doesn't always happen. And we had 9 gold medals. So whatever I would think really doesn't matter. And it's the medal that is important to the designers, because that really is a badge of honour. That's something that helps them in their business. It's hugely important. There's probably no other recognition that you can get. There isn't, actually, that you could get to show how good you are. So for someone like Jane or people like that who has, whatever it is, 6 gold medals, you know, she's unsurpassable. In terms of things that stood out and trends, definitely the use of colour, bold colour in boundaries. And, you know, we use this term boundary treatment in garden design, and it's hugely important. People think, you know, here's the garden, we'll do the flowers, we'll do the plants, and they forget about the horrible orange timber backdrop or the block concrete wall. It's all about the boundary treatment, as we say. Boundary treatment here has something that has improved over the 9 years. There's some fantastic boundaries out there, fantastic, interesting use of materials, but lots of really bold colours. Now, whether that was because Cuprinol offered them loads of free paint, I don't know. but there's some really bold use of colour out there, and it's great to see that. And then it puts a lot of life, particularly with our weather and the dull light that we have. It's great to have that colour there and have it there all year round. But you just have to be careful how you use it, because sometimes it just doesn't work if it's just a little bit too Mediterranean, shall we say. So colour is definitely in. The whole recycling and repurposing thing, we've been doing that for years here, but we're actually seeing things being done a little bit sharper. It's not just the rough and ready. Things have been properly finished and put together. The likes of Breffni's shed, you know, that the brewer's shed, that's an absolute masterpiece. Absolutely blew me away. What else is going on? Sculpture, people like Jane, notice they're using art and sculpture in the garden. That's something that's new to a lot of people. You really should use the garden as a gallery. And it doesn't have to be expensive. There's some great stuff out there, and you really can do something special. The thing that most visitors to Bloom don't get the opportunity to see is lighting, because we close too early. And some of the gardens do have lighting. We'll create photography and maybe some video on it, and we'll get it out there. But lighting, again, is something that's so important in the garden. Again, because of our weather, you might not get to see the garden until late at night. It might be dull, it might be overcast. Then you've got that through the winter. So if you're spending most of your time stuck at the kitchen sink, looking out the window, looking out through a patio door, you've got something. You really should light the features, the elements that you've gone to the bother of putting in. Trends, any other trends? I won't get into naming the plants because I've probably forgotten them. There are a couple of key plants coming through there. But the other thing about plants and plant trends that bloom, you have to be careful because we're trying to create these gardens look fantastic for 5 days. Some designers and nurseries will have stuff ready from early on, but others can't. So they're trying to find things that are in flower now. So you're going to see a lot of lupins, you're going to see a lot of foxgloves and things like that. If bloom was 2 weeks later, you'd see a different palette of plants. So we'll stay away from the plants. Yeah, but colour, art, sculpture, keep the recycle, and obviously the growing. The DIY organisation has gone from strength to strength. That trend is not waning. Everybody wants to grow something, and that's really important.
Okay, I said that was the last question, but I lied. I knew there was one other question. Like, is there any kind of, I suppose, development or new thing that you want to bring into bloom that you've got under consideration at the moment? That's a yes or no answer, I think.
Okay, the answer is yes, there is something, but we won't talk about it because year 10 is next year and we'd like to do a few special things to mark the birthday. So
okay, and then like last question, this really is the last question. What's been the addition to bloom that's most surprised you in terms of popularity?
Food. Absolutely. We had a sense when we started that because obviously all my colleagues are food experts, I know very little about it other than how to eat it. These guys bring a lot of knowledge, skills, expertise, passion with them. They have the relationships with the food industry and the drinks industry, of course, and they have created all this area. And it is what makes bloom. Obviously, the gardens are hugely important. But it is the food, it's not just catering, obviously. It's the whole story of food and the importance of food and provenance. And so my colleagues have brought that to the show, and that's really, I think that's what sets Bloom apart.
Excellent. Guy Graham, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Gary for joining us at Banter, and thanks to Roz at Borbia and her team for all their help with Banter at Bloom last year. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. Check out thisisbanter.com for news we're up to at Banter, plus you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. Bloom 2016 takes place at Dublin's Phoenix Park from June 2nd to 6th next, and keep an eye on bloominthepark.com for more. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.